With a massive influx of sewage and debris, how is the St. John's River faring after the damage wrought by Hurricane Irma? A closer look just ahead. Good Thursday morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Catch our podcast on iTunes or through our WJCT app. Just ahead, your chance to call in and speak with Riverkeeper Lisa Reinemann about the health of the waterway after the severe flood incident we saw from Hurricane Irma. What are your questions about this? Give us a call, 549-2937. Then later, how to cover the uninsured in this country is a big talker right now on Capitol Hill. Find out how Jacksonville's own Volunteers in Medicine is doing just that for the working uninsured of the First Coast. That and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, flooding from Hurricane Irma devastated many parts of the St. John's River Basin, including dumping a great deal of sewage into the river and its tributaries, along with massive amounts of storm debris. This is not good news because it comes on top of the constant struggle to protect the river from runoff and other dangers that threaten the waterway's health. Now, in the aftermath of Irma, of course, most of us are first and foremost concerned with the health and safety of ourselves and our loved ones, and then our own property. Obviously, that's really, really important. But the bigger picture, too, involves the health of this region more broadly, and that includes the river. So we're going to take a closer look at that right now as we welcome St. John's River Keeper Lisa Reinemann. Good morning.
Good morning.
And when it comes to Hurricane Irma's impacts on the St. John's River, what are your questions? What are your thoughts? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can also weigh in on our Facebook page. And so, Lisa, I wanted to preface that by saying, of course, people are, you know, before anything else, they're concerned about my house, my kids, and all that. And so it can sometimes be a challenge to look at some wider-ranging concerns. But this is a big concern. Irma damaged so many things. We might not stop and think about the fact that it damaged the river, too.
Well, exactly. And this issue with the river is not only an environmental issue. It's a health, human health issue, and an economic issue. The St. John's River is an economic driver not only for Jacksonville, but Palatka and all the communities further south. Our watershed is a huge watershed. It's 8,800 square miles. The river flows north for 310 miles. We're here at the end of that flow. So everything that has happened during Hurricane Irma further upriver is impacting us here. In the Middle Basin right now, they're still experiencing flooding from Cocoa all the way up through Sanford, DeLand to Astor, Florida, just south of Lake George. They're still over flood stage. And so not only do you have sewage spills, you also have fertilizers, you have pesticides, you have Superfund sites that you're getting more pollution in. So we're urging people as we restore ourselves back to normal to have extreme caution when engaging with the river and also think long-term how we can protect from these impacts in the future.
Right. And I definitely want to have that conversation too. And it's 549-2937 to get your questions in about this. In a minute, yeah, let's talk about how we can learn from this experience. But right now, what are the biggest concerns you have about pollution and impacts in the water? I'm thinking right off the top, debris and sewage, massive amounts of sewage.
Most definitely. The good news is there were fewer sewer spills from JEA than in Hurricane Matthew. As a result of Hurricane Matthew, JEA has worked to have backup power. So last year, there's about 11 million gallons of raw sewage that went in as a result of Matthew. This year, into the St. John's River and its tributaries, about 1.5 million. So good on the reduction side, but there was more flooding, so that adds more sewage and bacteria issues from failing septic tanks. Mm-hmm. And so it could be a wash, and the problem is those are non-point sources. It's harder to measure what the impact will be. But you do have a lot of bacteria, a lot of sewage pollution, and also Superfund sites. Just north of here, the Kerr McGee site, it is has exposed. They used to make fertilizers and pesticides. And so when those are inundated with floodwaters, that all goes into the St. John's. Further south of here, the Georgia Pacific pipeline. We did a flyover last Wednesday and noticed some irregularities about the pipeline. It appeared that they could be out of compliance. There were some issues with very visible discharge coming out of the pipeline, as well as near the Seminole Electric Plant. There's a coal holding facility, and there was a spill there that was reported. So it's not just sewage. It's toxic chemicals. It's harmful pesticides off of agriculture. So it's really a toxic soup, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to really grasp and understand how threatening it is. So we are saying extreme caution, not only for the bacteria, the pollution, but also, as you mentioned, marine debris. As we did our flyover from Jacksonville to Palatka, as far as you could see, there were dock damage or docks completely destroyed. And so if you are boating, you need to make sure you're aware of that. If you see it, report it. The Florida Department of Environmental Protection has a website. You can go report it, and they're going to help manage the debris cleanup, working with local governments as well as FEMA.
And if you're just tuning in, what are your questions for St. John's Riverkeeper Lisa Reinemann about the impact of Irma? It's 549-2937. Give us a call. And, you know, we kept hearing as we watched this historic flooding unfold that the river hadn't flooded like this in 150 years. So it's almost difficult to really get a sense of the long-term impacts right now, isn't it?
Well, it was quite surprising. I mean, I don't think anyone was prepared or expecting a Category 3 storm surge that we experienced. Part of that was due to a nor'easter that was coming right before the storm. But also the sea is rising, and that is our new reality. In fact, a recent study released by University of Florida says in Northeast Florida, the sea is rising 6 times faster than they anticipated. And so that is our new reality, and we have to focus on that to make sure that we make good policies, good decisions that will protect us from these rising seas, protect us from these larger storms as the ocean is warming, and also make sure that we put our citizens out of harm's way of flooding and the saltwater intrusion and pollution issues.
So then, what's the Riverkeeper's position on how Jacksonville and other coastal cities can better protect themselves, because we are going to be seeing more storms like this?
Most definitely. And we have to have a very aggressive discussion about resiliency. Resiliency is a way that your ecosystem can bounce back from these major events. And the flip, the good side too, or the bonus, is that the projects and the policies that could be in place to protect Floridians from extreme storms under these conditions can also enhance our quality of life and restore our rivers and our water supply during normal conditions. And so really need to have a conversation about what's our vulnerabilities and also what type of things we can do with green infrastructure, what can we do with sustainable growth, and make sure we have those systems in place. But unfortunately, elected leaders for the past 6 years have supported the gutting of these protections. Governor Scott killed the department that's all about growth management and smart growth. And we continue to have elected officials supporting unsustainable projects that don't have mitigation to offset damage to our wetlands and the very ecological systems that could help protect us all.
And what would be an example of a project you consider to be unsustainable?
Well, one is the dredging project. You know, right now, Jacksport, the city of Jacksonville, is supporting moving forward with dredging the river from the current 40 to 47 feet for 13 to 11 miles. That's debating right now. And the problem with that, it's unmitigated. The river is not being fortified to accept that impact. That project will accelerate the impact of sea level rise. It'll accelerate and exaggerate the flooding threats. It will damage wetlands. It'll damage the river's ability to deal with pollution. And so by supporting that unmitigated project, you're actually supporting more damage and putting Floridians in harm's way in the future for future storms.
The supporters of the river dredging disagree. They say that they've planned for mitigation, that they'll work with the Army Corps to allow for potential impacts to the river. Your organization disagrees. You filed a lawsuit to try to stop the project. Where does that stand?
We actually have our first day in court in January of 2018. And sadly, the Jacksport is moving quickly forward to start with the first 3 miles. They're trying to literally get their foot in the door to stop, to hold their position. But there are many things, like they didn't look at the flood impacts. When asked about flooding concerns, they did not get a no-rise certification, which is required required for federal projects. When we looked at and scientists asked them about the acceleration of sea level rise, they didn't say that will not happen. They said we simply did not study that. That's not acceptable under these extreme conditions, what's happening in the state of Florida and our new reality.
Okay, let's talk for a minute about the long-term impact of sea level rise on this community and how rising oceans will interact with the St. John's River in a negative way. What are some of the long-term impacts that you are concerned about?
Well, one is saltwater intrusion. As the ocean rises, we're seeing more saltwater having a bit more force, more tidal force going further upriver. Exactly the same impacts that the dredging will have. In fact, the Army Corps says that these impacts, the negative impacts of dredging, are exactly the same as sea level rise. It's going to happen anyway, so let's go ahead and do it, which is unacceptable. Because what it will do is accelerate saltwater intrusion, and that saltwater intrusion does damage to our wetlands and our grasses. And when you lose these submerged grasses, you start having less stability on your banks, so you have more erosion, you have more impacts to submerged trees, and so you have damage to the water quality, and it also makes us vulnerable to more flooding in the future.
Okay, let's go to your calls now. How are you doing in the aftermath of Irma? We've all been through the ringer, and that includes the St. John's River, which was the entity that brought us so much misery. Of course, rivers will flood. But give us a call with your questions right now. 549-2937. Guy is in St. John's County now. Hi, Guy. Good morning.
Good morning. Obviously, I'm sure that a few of us that are interested in fishing are curious whether any testing can be done covering the water from Crescent City North as far as the consumption of fish that are caught in the St. John River.
Okay, thanks for that question.
And Guy, that's a great question.
I accidentally disconnected Rhea by mistake. Rhea, give us a call back. I think you said you were in Bostwick. Sorry about that, Rhea. Go ahead, Lisa.
In the Florida Wildlife and Fish Commission, they are doing sampling. There have been some fish kills related to the storm and the pollution in the river. And so they are a great resource. They have a hotline. You can Google Florida FWC and go to FWC.com, and they have information on where they're doing sampling and the result of those samples.
All righty. And here is an email from Rob. I hope people realize that the river collects everything within the basin: nutrients, toxins, pollutants, bacteria, pathogens from the entire basin. Some of these pollutants may become especially dangerous when toxins are combined. I hope people realize that when the river overflowed her banks, these toxins are now in the yards and streets of Jacksonville. He's right.
He is right. And that's something that it's when you have major flooding like we've experienced, it's very difficult to capture and document and have scientific data to alert the public of the dangers. And so that's why you hear the state agents saying we have to look at this with extreme caution. Unfortunately, we saw lots of people just kayaking and engaging in Hogan's Creek and other areas for fun, and you're putting yourself in harm's way, because he's exactly right. It is a toxic soup. It will be until it clears out. And again, we're at the tail end of a 300-mile river, 8,800-square-mile basin, so we're getting toxins, we're getting pollution
from the whole state, by the way.
It's in large part of the state.
The storm moved its way up the state, and the St. John's River was sort of the release valve for a lot of water.
Most definitely. They are releasing some water from the St. John's River into the Indian River Lagoon near the Melbourne area, and unfortunately that damages the Indian River Lagoon. But we have 15 water keepers in the state of Florida. We're all experiencing impacts from pollution as well as flooding. And again, those short-sighted policies that are making us more vulnerable to these extreme storms.
Okay, what are your questions for St. John's River keeper Lisa Reinemann? It's 549-2937 to join us. We have Rhea in Bostwick back with us now. Hi, Rhea. Sorry, I accidentally cut you off there. Good morning.
Morning. That's okay. I just thought that maybe there was a positive side to flooding, which would have been in the canals there, the sort of man-made canals. They were choked with horrible duckweed and slime, and now they're sort of clear and fresh-looking again. That was my remark.
Oh, okay. Yeah, thanks for that.
And that is true. We have seen some flushing of areas like that. The Apalachicola River actually got a needed lift from the rain, so they are actually experiencing some positive impacts from it. The problem is, though, when you flush out those invasive type of plants, they start dying in the river. It adds to the nutrient pollution problem. And we did see last week some algal blooms starting, green algae that can be toxic. Luckily, the state is out testing and surveying for green algae, but if you do see anything like that in the river, stay away from it. That can be highly toxic as well.
Algae blooms after a storm like this, they're still a concern, but I'm guessing they're no longer at the top of the list, whereas in the past they really were.
They could be as the weather heats up. We actually, last Wednesday, 2 days after the storm, while flying over, we saw green algae starting at that point, which I was quite shocked. But when you have so many nutrients, so much fertilizer in the river right now, it's just the perfect mix as the weather warms up. With the current perfect conditions, it could outbreak at any point.
Terry on the south side. Hey, Terry, how are you doing this morning?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
I just wanted to comment on the importance of the lands of the water management district. They were purchased to provide flood storage and restore wetlands. And I just wrote a book, Backcountry Trails of Florida, because I've worked on the St. Johns River Water Management District from where it begins in the south upper basin at Vero, all the way north to the St. Johns River. And just wanted to ask Lisa about her feelings of the importance of continuing Florida Forever and conserving these lands so we have storage during these hurricanes and tropical storm 100-year, 500-year events.
I totally agree with you. I think it's of extreme importance. We are fortunate to have more than 600,000 acres of conservation land within the St. Johns River watershed. Unfortunately, though, there has been a rush to surplus those lands. We have been working with advocates for years to make sure those lands are protected. They're not sold off willy-nilly just for more development, because not only do they provide protection for the river, it's a great recreational resource. So there's a win-win there. And we also support expanding Florida Forever. We're working with the Florida Conservation Coalition, 1,000 Friends, North Florida Land Trust, and others to really make sure that those Amendment $1 that were passed overwhelmingly by Floridians back in 2014, which are dedicated to land conservation, which will protect our waterways, our water supply, and Floridians from these extreme storms. So it's of utmost importance that we focus on purchasing and managing these lands properly.
People might not realize that people think Florida became inhabitable when air conditioning became widespread. But even going beyond that, Florida became inhabitable when they could figure out the water. People don't realize that about Florida. Yeah. They think, oh, nobody moved here till there was air conditioning. But it really began with figuring out the state's water systems.
Exactly. And manipulating the state's water systems and straightening and trying to drain off, you know, like the upper basin of the St. Johns River. They drained it all off in the Indian River Lagoon. They're now trying to restore it because they realize we need to have that natural flow. And so we need to respect nature and respect what makes Florida great, which is our waterways. But that means making sure that we're focusing on smart, sustainable growth. Right now, there's plans in the headwaters of the St. Johns to develop 133,000 acres and basically creating a city twice the size of Orlando right at the headwaters of the St. Johns. They don't have water supply to do that, so they're wanting to dam two of the tributaries. And so it could undermine the St. Johns River health right at the source, not to mention the additional runoff pollution, fertilizers, and everything that comes with that. So we have to get back to focusing on sustainable growth and not looking at everything just on the economic benefit. Recognize the economic value of our waterways.
It's 549-2937. Brian in Ponte Vedra Beach. Hey, Brian, good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good.
I'm so impressed with your show because a lot of people don't realize that in the 1940s, Florida was deemed inhabitable.
Uninhabitable, yes.
Uninhabitable.
That's right.
Yeah, it's not worth living here. Now, if we continue to change the natural landscape of things, we're inviting all kinds of other problems. And the premise of my call was to mention the fact that if we have saltwater intrusion into the St. Johns River, we're going to lose foliage, we're going to lose sea oats, we're going to lose all kinds of stuff, and we're going to invite very violent animals into our ecosystem, such as the bull shark. The bull shark has adapted to live in brackish water. And if people don't know what brackish water is, it's a mixture of salt and fresh water. Now, these animals are very fierce. They're one of the most feared animals in the water. They're very violent, very predatory, and they will attack human beings. And there was a story just a few years ago, a guy who had always jumped off of his dock where he kept his boat to go for a morning swim. Well, he was attacked by a bull shark in the St. John's River, and he was killed by this animal.
Wow.
We got to do everything we can to prevent Army Corps of Engineers and everybody else from changing the natural conditions of this river, because it is crucial to the survival of this city. I'm a strong proponent for the ecosystem. Just leave it alone, you know, make alterations where it's necessary, but don't try to change something into something it wasn't meant to be.
All right, thank you, Brian. Mike in Atlantic Beach. Hey, Mike. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I heard the comment that the University of Florida study about the acceleration of the sea level rise, and I would just love to have that dimensionalized a little bit. In other words, what is the rate of rise we're seeing? Is it an inch a year, a foot a year? What's the
great question.
Rate?
Thank you for that, Mike. Let's talk about that, because I believe, thank you, Mike, I believe the UF study said the oceans are rising 6 times faster than anticipated all along the eastern seaboard, particularly along the southeastern seaboard.
Exactly.
Correct?
Exactly. And unfortunately, I can't quote the exact rate, but I can get that to you if you'll email me at lisa@stjohnsriverkeeper.org.
I'll look it up while you talk.
Oh, thank you. But when our scientists were actually looking at the gauge at Mayport, they thought the gauge was broken because they could not believe the what it was saying. And we confirmed actually that the gauge was not broken, and then that study came out. So it was quite alarming. And unfortunately, a lot of the decisions are based on a historic rate of sea level rise, like the dredging project. They've not looked at the new normal. And so we're making ourselves more vulnerable and accelerating these impacts on top of a very accelerated rate of rise that was not anticipated.
Okay. And the rate of rise per year is, Mike, according to the journal Scientific American, they're saying it's still relatively modest. So this is a long-term, slow-rolling thing. 3 to 3.5 millimeters per year. That seems infinitesimal. But what climate scientists talk about is the build over time and the trends over time. And the journal Scientific American, the recent study that Lisa referenced, which researchers at University of Florida did, in particular, they're saying sea level rise has hot spots where the ocean creeps up faster than average. And along the southeast coast, it's spiking 6 times faster than average, and they attribute that to a combination of factors. So the whole coastline along the southeast is seeing this. Now, it's not anything the average beachgoer would notice right now. This is something that they're watching over a period of years, decades.
Exactly. You can, though, actually see evidence of this. If you're driving down San Jose, for example, across Christopher Creek or Goodby's Lake, if you're at Wicked Brewery and seeing over the trees there, you see cypress trees that are literally getting burned by saltwater intrusion.
Mm.
If you do a flyover over the Ortega River, you can see a difference in the trees. You can actually tell the trees that are stressed by too much saltwater in the system. It's happened over the years. It's being tracked. And what happens with the dredging, it accelerates those impacts in a very short amount of time. And so sea level rise happens gradually, as you mentioned, and so it kind of adapts, but it adapts in a way that makes us more vulnerable to flooding and to issues with sewage, to our stormwater system collapsing. And then with our ecosystem, it doesn't have time to adapt like it would when it happens gradually.
549-2937. Let's go to Tom on the west side now. Hi, Tom. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning to y'all, too. And I just wanted to say thank you for all that you're doing to protect this valuable resource. And I just had a simple question. I was wondering, do y'all have any idea how long it'll be before the river is safe to enjoy again?
I wish I had an answer to that. You know, the good news, JEA has cleared the surrounding, the impacted area of their spills here in Jacksonville. You actually go to their website at JEA.com to see the result. They've cleared the creeks except for Strawberry Creek and Fishing Creek. They're still having some high levels of bacteria there. The problem is with the flooding, there's a lot of non-point pollution. There's a lot of pollution coming from septic tanks, from overspilling of ponds, of pipes that aren't being, you can't track the volume. And so spoke with the Department of Environmental Protection this morning. They're still advising to have extreme caution because, again, being in the lower basin where you're getting everything from upriver, we just don't know. And so we know it's still coming. We know there's pollution out there. So have extreme caution. Look for that marine debris, which is another hazard. And then hopefully we'll know more. And sadly, the river has ongoing pollution issues with failing septic tanks and things like that. So now it's more inundated, and we'll continue to try to have advocate for policies to prevent this in the future.
Israel on the north side. Hello, good morning.
Yes, good morning. My father grew up on Pottsburg Creek, and so did I. And we recently looked at the pictures and the different changes that river has or that tributary has taken, and it's lost most of the plant life and things have just changed habitat-wise for the whole area there. And I wonder if that's something to do with the original dredging of the St. John's River, because I know I've seen pictures from the 50s and 60s and of the vegetation and the plant life that was plentiful, and now it's just gone. And I think that has something to do with what they're going to do with dredging the river again deeper. So I just wonder, that's my question. And thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Your observation is absolutely correct. There is historical evidence showing that the past dredging, we've deepened this river many times. It was originally about 12 feet, now it's 40 feet, and that pulls in more salt water. There has been documented damage to Pottsburg Creek, to Trout River, to Ortega. We will see more if this dredging moves forward, and they have not mitigated for this damage in the past. And that is also in addition to the sea level rise. So it's complex. You can't blame it all on dredging, but the dredging exaggerates the impact of rising seas.
Maggie in Fernandina Beach. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, thanks. How are you?
Good. I was just curious as to the divers at CDA Academy. They are diving in the trout, and I was wondering how safe it was to put the students in the water right now.
In the Trout River. Thank you for that.
Well, as I understand it, the Trout River has been cleared by JEA to background conditions. There are some ongoing pollution issues in the trout. Be happy to, again, if you'd email me at lisa@stjohnsriverkeeper.org, I'll send you more details specifically on the trout to understand what the background conditions are.
Here's a comment on our Facebook page. I've got a friend who is building onto his house using reclaimed wood he found from the river and the ocean. He's been in hog heaven since the waters went down. Is it safe to use that kind of reclaimed wood?
That's a good question. I would not be an expert on that, but it's an interesting creative reuse, but I would ask someone that understands wood and what the potential worries may be.
And any final thoughts about this as we continue to watch this space?
Well, I think, you know, one, of course, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, we have to rebuild. We have to help our neighbors that had the experience of flooding and still flooding in Black Creek and further south. But then we have to have a long-term conversation about responsible planning, responsible protections that will fortify our community during extreme weather and also enhance our quality of life under normal conditions.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Lisa Reinemann is the St. John's Riverkeeper. Much more still ahead later, how volunteers in medicine is helping the working uninsured of the First Coast. But up next, Medtronic treating a sinus condition that affects so many Americans. We'll tell you about it right after this.
The Brits are worried about Brexit, sure. The Germans, though, yeah, no, they're good.
I think for me it will increase the demand, actually. More people, more business, more money. The Brexit will be good for us.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Dare Brexit, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
WJCT's Jaguar Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space, indoor bathroom access. Contact Holly Manuel at 358-6311 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele, hoping you'll join us this weekend for a Prairie Home Companion from the Fitzgerald Theater. Our guests include Jim James, Amy Mann, and the hilarious comedy of Hurry Kondabolu. Plus, the Royal Academy of Radio Actors and Ms. Sarah Watkins will be in the house. We'll have our musicians' birthday salute, the Powdermilk Instant Song Request, and I'll have a brand new song for you, all this and more this weekend.
Saturday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Jazz Night in America, Eddie Palmieri and Harlem River Drive.
And my problem with Harlem River Drive is that I wanted a crossover. And you know who were my biggest fans? The anti-government movement, the Weathermen.
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. It's a sinus condition that affects 1 in 8 adults in this country. Chronic rhinosinusitis, or CRS, is no fun. It can give you headaches, facial pain and pressure, fatigue, nasal obstruction. But there are ways to treat it. With more, we welcome Tim Brack. He's Medtronic's ENT marketing manager here in Jacksonville. That's the ear, nose, and throat division. Hey, Tim.
Hi there.
And Medtronic, such a great company with a big unit here in Jacksonville. You are over ENT. Ear, nose, and throat can make so many Americans miserable, problems with that part of our bodies. Let's talk about this. What is chronic rhinosinusitis?
So most folks probably know somebody who suffers from sinus pain, sinus symptoms. Facial pressure, facial pain. And a lot of times that's caused by their sinuses. So you've got four sinuses in your head. You've got a frontal, a maxillary, a sphenoid, and then some ethmoid sinuses. And what happens with those is they can, due to inflammation, become impacted where they don't drain properly or there's not proper airflow or other ways for the body to naturally clear those spaces out. So when that happens, you run into a situation where it causes headaches, it causes other issues and challenges. And when you originally have that, it's called sinusitis. And then if that carries on for 12 weeks or more, it turns into chronic sinusitis.
I can't even imagine having that permanently. How awful.
Right.
So
right.
How would you know whether you just have a temporary problem or you really have a chronic issue?
Most folks will run into an issue where they may go out and go to CVS or Walgreens and of course, purchase some over-the-counter medications to try to get temporary relief. What a lot of folks really need to do is if they've been suffering with this for a while, we recommend that they go see an otolaryngologist or an ENT physician who's an expert in this space and can help them. And a lot of times when they go see them, they may give them a couple options. One of them could be, further medication or other things that can help clear it out, and that sometimes works for a lot of people. If that doesn't, what they've come up with now are some minimally invasive procedures that allow folks to actually have these procedures done in the physician's office and give them the opportunity to, not have to go to the OR and not have to go in and have full-blown sinus surgery, which scares a lot of people, unfortunately.
Sure. Oh, that's always preferable. And so Medtronic's a leader in these types of options. What are some of the options?
Yeah, so we're a leader in what's called surgical navigation. So from an ENT standpoint, if you do go to the OR, there are pieces of equipment that allow the surgeons to know exactly where our instruments are at all times. So my sinuses are different than your sinuses, and we've both got our own kind of roadmap. And what we have is a system called surgical navigation that allows a surgeon to know exactly where their instruments are at all times. So they can make sure they're in the right spot. They can confirm that they're in the right spot. And they can also confirm that they're taking out the diseased tissue or moving it or doing other things to help mitigate those issues that may happen.
And one option is called NuVent. Can you tell us about that?
Correct. So one of the newer therapies on the market is a minimally invasive procedure called balloon sinus dilation. And what they'll do is if those sinus ostia are impacted or swollen and they're closed up and not allowing that sinus to drain, they'll actually put a balloon in that area, similar to what they do in cardiovascular. And they'll inflate that balloon, move back the mucosa. There's some small bones in there that will fracture. And it allows them to open up that airway and cause drainage as well as airflow to go back into that sinus.
So this is something that Medtronic has been really successful with, the NuVent EM sinus dilation system. Where can patients with symptoms go for more information about this?
Yeah, so we have, when we introduced this product, we also came out with a wonderful patient resource website. It's sinusitissurgery.com. And if patients go there, there's a couple different things they can do there. One is you can take a self-assessment, which is a simple 20-question questionnaire that allows you to kind of walk through your symptoms, what's going on with your sinuses, and then it'll tell you at the end whether or not you may be a candidate or you may have sinusitis.
Now, I did not realize this about Medtronic. Your headquarters are in Ireland, your U.S. headquarters in Minneapolis, but you've got a big presence here in Jacksonville as well. And is it primarily the ENT division that you work in, ear, nose, and throat?
Yep. So Medtronic Ear, Nose, and Throat is headquartered here in Jacksonville. And what a lot of folks don't know is we're over in the South Point area off of 95 and Butler. And we manufacture a lot of our ear, nose, and throat products there. And it's not just for the U.S. We manufacture products there that go all over the world. Mm-hmm. So we've got a large footprint here in Jacksonville for sales and marketing and administrative duties for ENT, but also a large manufacturing hub as well.
Well, thanks for joining us. Hope you guys did okay during the storm, by the way.
We did. Yeah,
that's
we did.
Good.
Hopefully everybody did, you did as well and everybody else.
Yeah, we're all still standing, thank goodness. Yeah. And thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
Tim Brack is Medtronic's ENT marketing manager here in Jacksonville. That device is called NuVent, and we'll be right back with some more medical news for you. Keep listening.
There's one thing we look for in almost every job: upward mobility. These days, many companies are leaner, nimbler, and more productive, and many workers are worse off. How can American workers get back to moving up instead of just hanging on? Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
From PBS and Emmy Award-winning directors Ken Burns and Lynn Novick comes a landmark documentary event, The Vietnam War.
What was it all about? Was it worth it?
It was extremely traumatic, like the ground was suddenly cut from under you.
See the series Vanity Fair calls a monumental achievement, The Vietnam War.
Tonight at 8 on WJCT Public Television.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, Capitol Hill has been abuzz this week with talk about the Graham-Cassidy bill. Have you heard about that? GOP Senators Lindsey Graham of South Carolina and Bill Cassidy of Louisiana have put forth a last-ditch measure that would repeal and replace Obamacare. Now, supporters say the bill would guarantee coverage to virtually all Americans and not exclude those with pre-existing conditions. Critics of Graham, Cassidy in particular, this week, late-night host Jimmy Kimmel, have really disputed that. They say the bill would cause millions to lose coverage since many insurance decisions would be outsourced to states. Now, as this drama plays out in Washington, out here in the states, like Florida, local organizations have been working all along for many years to make sure working people get some kind of access to health care without insurance, whether or not they have it. Now, here in our area, the group that's perhaps most prominent in that effort is Jacksonville's own Volunteers in Medicine. Volunteers in Medicine is the city's free healthcare clinic that provides outpatient, primary, and specialty care to working, low-income, uninsured individuals and their families. The goal? To provide the best possible care to keep people healthy, employed, and out of hospital emergency rooms. Because when you seek care in the ER, that's the most expensive and least efficient way to get care. How does Volunteers in Medicine work? Well, physicians volunteer their time to make sure people who need the care get it. Pretty simple. Later this month, Volunteers in Medicine is having a very fancy affair. It's called the Capitol Affair. It's a rare lunchtime event on a Saturday at the Capitol Grill at the St. John's Town Center. And that's just one of the things going on with this. Here with a preview, we welcome Noor Ashouri. She's Director of Marketing with First Coast Cardiovascular. That's a strong supporter of Volunteers in Medicine. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also with us, Amy Boggs of Raymond James. She is Volunteers in Medicine's Woman with Heart for September. Good to see you.
Great to see you, Melissa.
We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, let's talk about Noor, Volunteers in Medicine, and why so many medical groups like First Coast Cardiovascular really support this. Tell me a little bit about that.
So we've been a partner with Volunteers in Medicine for over a decade. We've had several of our own physicians volunteer their time, and we see many of their patients for cardiac testing. Some access to care and access to quality care is something that we are always talking about in our meetings and in our practice. We really believe every individual should have the access that they need and they deserve. We're very passionate about keeping patients out of the hospital as well. Volunteers in Medicine really does a great job in offering those patients that full spectrum of care and keeping them out of the hospitals in a time that they really need it.
And aren't you a former volunteer yourself?
I am.
And what did you do as a volunteer?
I helped qualify people. So there's certain metrics they have to meet in order to become a patient of Volunteer in Medicine. So I helped them qualify.
And what are the metrics? How can, if you're listening right now, for example, and you don't have insurance and you can't afford it, how do you know if you can qualify for this?
So you do have to be a working individual, and it is based on income levels. And I think something Volunteers in Medicine does really well is they form strong partnerships with other nonprofits in the field. So if they can't take you on as a patient themselves, they can definitely refer you to someone that can.
Okay. And the website, by the way, is vim-jax.org. Now, let's talk about the big bash for Volunteers in Medicine and also Amy's involvement with another event coming up Saturday. A Capitol Affair is coming up at the end of the month. This is, I'm hearing, it's almost already sold out. This is going to be at the Capitol Grill. They're going to open their doors for lunch on a Saturday, which they never do. Dan Skruas, Brandy Robertson, and executive chef Jared Gilbert, and the staff of the Capitol Grill at the St. John's Town Center doing all this. And they are literally, Amy, rolling out the red carpet for guests. There will be a red carpet, a fashion show, a silent auction, a live Maine lobster dinner as one of the prizes. A week-long driving experience of a Tesla is another item. I mean, just an incredible amount of cool stuff attracting people to this big bash. That's happening at the end of the month. But let's talk also about another way that you are supporting Volunteers in Medicine. You are the organization's Woman with Heart for September. And what that means is you're wearing this beautiful diamond harp-shaped necklace that was donated by Beard's Jewelry. Every month, a different woman wears this as a way to promote Volunteers in Medicine, and it looks great on you, I must say.
Well, It's a privilege to wear it, and I've gotten quite attached. When on some,
you don't want to give it back.
Kinda. Come looking
Diamonds
for me.
Diamonds are a girl's best friend.
I know. That's going to be difficult.
Try to find me on September 30th.
Oh, that's when you have to give it. So you wear it all month as a way to tell people when they compliment
Absolutely.
You on it, you can explain.
Yes. There's a story behind this necklace, and it's one that I'm so happy to be telling. Volunteers in Medicine, I was introduced with Cindy Cooper's involvement and enthusiasm, as well as Mary Pat Corrigan. So what has happened in this year is the first class of women with heart. So 12 women were identified in the community. And then smartly, each of us has a month that we can dedicate and really be an ambassador to all of the amazing work that's going on by volunteers. So enthusiastic about the work that they are doing. The model is really enviable and very highly functioning. So it's an easy story to tell, and I just am happy because so many people have not heard of them yet.
And this is a way to get the word out. And you're also doing something this Saturday. It's called Yoga with Heart.
It is.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
What's happening?
So what's happening is I was just trying to think of how would be a way that I'd like to deliver my message. I believe in fitness. I like preventive medicine. And I'm passionate about yoga. Years ago, I got certified as a yoga instructor. So I thought it would be interesting to – it's amazing how many people have not yet done yoga – to offer a community yoga class. So excited to say that the beautiful lawn behind the TPC clubhouse, which many people know at Players Time or they've been to beautiful weddings there, for the first time, it is going to convert into an outdoor yoga studio.
Nice.
So we hope to be mat to mat. We have a record, we're exceeding our goals of attendance. We have people from all ages, genders, yogic abilities, but really encouraging newbies to come and experience yoga. Talk to a friend yesterday who said they got yoga mats 2 years ago, have never taken them out of the wrapper. So we're very excited about the event.
I have one in the back of my car, and I very, very, very occasionally take it out and go to a Saturday morning yoga class. So that, yeah, I know exactly.
We'd love to have
So how can people be part of this? And by the way, when they come out, they have a chance to win the Heart of Jacksonville 2-carat diamond necklace that you're wearing right now.
Yes, that would be reason enough to show up.
Yeah.
In addition to several raffle prizes that we will be awarding at the event. So it happens, registration is at 8:30. The program and yoga will start at 9, going till about 11:30. You can go onto the Volunteers in Medicine website and look up Yoga with Heart to learn more about the event. But I encourage you to check it out because we've got tremendous enthusiasm and we're very excited about the response.
Here's an email too about Volunteers in Medicine. I'm a patient there, says Jennifer on the South Side. They do fantastic work. I have Crohn's disease. Without Volunteers in Medicine, I would not have access to the care that I need and I would suffer greatly. Thanks to the care I've been able to get at Volunteers in Medicine, I am now in remission.
Wow.
I would like to encourage your listeners to support their work. Thanks, Jennifer. That's Jennifer on the South Side. And again, if you go to vim-jax.org, you can learn all about Volunteers in Medicine. Yoga with Heart with Amy is this Saturday at TPC. And then next Saturday, September 30th, it's a Capital Affair at the Capital Grill at the St. John's Town Center. I believe it is almost sold out, so that's exciting. But I'm really looking forward to it. And ladies, I thank you both so much for being here and sharing this with us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
She's Anura Shuri, Director of Marketing with First Coast Cardiovascular, and the Woman with Heart for September, Amy Boggs of Raymond James. And that's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merschart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. You can get our podcast on iTunes or through the WJCT app. Download that app, by the way, to access all of our programs. Next on 1A, why Paul Manafort is a name you're sure to hear more often as the investigation into Russia's interference in the 2016 election continues. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for a Friday roundtable. See you then, and have a great day.
As Hurricane Irma moved across the First Coast,
the road is covered in debris. We're coming apart out here.
WJCT and the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network, we're here for you.
It is 6:05 a.m. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
The voices you trust on air throughout the storm.
So far in Clay County, there's a really good amount of flooding.
We are joined now by Ryan Bank of member station WJCT. He is in that city's emergency operations center.
With the information you need to keep you and your family safe.
Trying to give you as much information as we can, as quickly as we can look it up.
Jim is along I-95. Hi, Jim. How are things where you are?
Oh, pretty hellish.
The highest winds with Mayport Naval Air Station reporting in with an 87-mile-per-hour wind gust.
WJCT, your community, your world, your news.
Thank you all so much for all your hard work. Believe me, you guys are a lifeline to us.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.